It's that wonderful time of the year. The draft is here. The draft is on. Episode 290 of YWC Football Talk, and the squad is back, all in full force. Sophie Weller, McGarvin, myself, Griff. How are we feeling tonight, everyone?
Feeling good. Happy to be here.
Ready for the draft to be over.
Yes, that too.
Because I feel like with the draft, it's just this whole thing. Like, there's not a lot of intrigue. There's not a lot of surprise. I feel like, honestly, it's more fans of the teams picking from, like, 4 to 12 is where they're just waiting for, like, one of these teams to fall when we know what's going to happen at 1. And then 2 is – I don't even want to say it's where the dominoes are going to fall, but, like, 2 is kind of that, like, whole, oh, hey, so this is what's probably going to happen at 3. And then I think it's really where – it's Arizona is where the draft starts.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first 3 picks, people are fairly confident at what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know. I'm like speaking, this is all opinion based, but unless there's a solid offer, the Patriots don't plan on moving. And I genuinely do not think they're going to move this quickly unless there is a team that has Drake May on their board that is like, give me him this minute. I will give you like 7 first round picks. Here you go. Not exactly 7, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just a crazy bag. And it's just not realistic for any team to do that right now. I don't think any team's actually like in that position to do that either, to give up that many. Like, you know, the asking price for those first 3 picks are so high that it's like, and you know, most of them have already said we're keeping them. The only one that's open is the Patriots.
Yeah. And the most report before McGarvin talks, I just want to say something, because I feel like most of the reports of like people send me where it's like, oh, the Patriots might do this. And I'm like, it comes from one of the bot accounts where it's like, there's no direct source correlated to it. So unless there's a source coming from it, or like the most recent one I saw was Sean Payton wants to trade up which would involve Pat Surtain, which I will say this right now, if he comes saying, we'll give you 2 first round picks and Pat Surtain, I'll take that trade in a heartbeat. Like, just here saying that, because Pat Surtain, I believe, is one of the better corners, or one of the best corners in the NFL right now. So, and probably regarding to a Bama boy coming to New England, he's never going to hurt his feelings there. But besides that, it's just going to be, hey, take what you can get. And then it's the Chargers, it's the Giants, those are the teams that like are the real intriguing spots, because they're the teams where it's like, hey, you have the Chargers who are not in win now mode, but like you got to do something for Herbert, and then the Giants who are just a dysfunctional organizational mess. So we'll really have to wait and see what happens. But I think it's just everyone trying to be like, oh, what are the Patriots going to do? What's going to go on in New England? It's just that like surprise where we're all like, okay, shut up, let's just get to Thursday night. We're going to pick our quarterback and we're going to move on past this.
Completely agree. I think really all of the smoke around, you know, will they trade down? Will they, you know, not trade down, stay at 3 and take like, you know, Marvin Harrison, or maybe they'll take Joe Alt or whatever. I think that's all driven by the fact that the combine was about 2 months ago, and we needed content in between, you know what I mean? And it's tough if you're, you know, tasked with, you know, making a mock draft every week, or, you know, every other week, you know, per your employer. It's tough if, you know, you're going to do the same top 5 every single time. You know, you got to get eyeballs on the screen. So it's like, all right, at that point you start testing scenarios and all that. But I have never wavered on this. I thought since the middle of the season, I still think that the Patriots will take a quarterback at, you know, at 3, or at the time I was like, oh, but you know, maybe they're picking like 7th or whatever, but we sucked. So they'll be taking a quarterback at 3. We kind of already know that's happening. And I think all of the other scenarios, you know, about trading back or whatever, I don't think they're viable. I don't think they make a lot of sense for this team, right? People in particular, they're pointing to the Minnesota's package, right? They're like, oh, 11, 23, and a future, you know, future first or future assets, add-ons or whatever that the case is. But that's like the crux of it. Everyone's like, yes, 11, 23, go up there, get them. And I just don't love that. I think 11 is too far to fall from 3. Because at that point, you're not just giving up on, you know, the quarterback. And everyone's like, oh, well, what are you going to do? Take the 3rd best quarterback? I personally think they're going to end up taking the 2nd best quarterback at 3. But the idea of moving out of the top 10 not only takes you out of, you know, the top 3, very likely the top 4 quarterbacks, right? Because I think J.J. McCarthy also goes in that top 5, maybe 6 range. But you lose out on the quarterback. You lose out on the offensive tackle, right? Because by all accounts, we know Joe Alt's probably going to go in the top 10. Olu out of Penn State, he's there's a chance he also sneaks into the top 10. So, you know, you're out of your two top tackles there. We know all three of the wide receivers are going to go, right? Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Romo Odunze. We know they're going to go top 10 as well. So at that point, the Patriots' three biggest needs are quarterback, offensive tackle, and wide receiver, in my opinion, and I'm sure many people would agree. Those are, like, the big ones. I think moving out of the top 10 and falling all the way to 11 just kind of takes all of that off the board. And I just don't really love that idea because I can understand if you're like, oh, you know, I'm not huge on the quarterbacks, you know, trade back out of the quarterback. Don't take any of the quarterbacks. Fine. If that's really going to be your stance, I just don't agree with, you know, passing on the top quarterbacks, top wide receivers, and top offensive tackles for a mid-round, first-round pick, right? And I know that there's always the talk about, you know, what add-ons they get. What, you know, maybe you'll get the first next year, or maybe you'll get, you know, first, the third, or whatever the case is. And I just, I don't know. I think if you're trying to build a team, right, you go out, you get your as they say, blue-chip players, right, your core players, go out and get one. And if you have a need at quarterback, it doesn't make sense to pass on that. When you're in position to take a good one.
The one thing I want to say, too, is with this, I love how, like, so obviously since the three of us last spoke, Stephon Diggs is now out of the division, now a Houston Texan, to where someone tweeted out, it's like, everyone should follow the Houston Texan model. And I'm just like, no shit, Sherlock. Every single team in the NFL has been following that for years. Hey, get your quarterback and just take him and go, you know? Like, so we're – like, I've said this before, like, I love Houston, and I love their players, except for this year when they played New England. I just don't like how everyone's kind of emphasizing them, where it's like this whole, no, they're the model franchise, when less than 3 years ago, they were one of the most dysfunctional organizations in the NFL. Just shows, A, how short-term memory a lot of people who cover this league are, and B, that, look, this is a year-to-year league. Anything can happen, anything could change. That's not me saying, look, they're this or they're that, but they just basically, they had a good hand at the poker table. That's literally what the Houston Texans did last year at the draft. And
I don't mind. Oh, I was just going to say, I don't mind all the comparisons to the Texans. I do think it can get a little outrageous. The only thing I like about it is that, like, one, it shows that, because I think a lot of people are down on taking a quarterback so high. I know there are some, like, even reporters who are like that.
Yeah.
I am not. I think that is a need. And I think with this quarterback class, knowing how good they are, knowing how, like, how high the expectations are, you grab them and go, similar to CJ. You just do it. And the rest can work. I'm not saying will, but can work itself out if you do it correctly. The Texans did it correctly. The other thing I like about it is, you know, all these fans are talking about a complete rebuild. They're talking about how long this is going to take. I do think the Texans are a good example that if you get the right pieces, it is not as long as it's made out to sound. You know, like you said, 3 years ago, they were a complete disaster. And now, look, they made it to the playoffs and they even got a win. Like, you know, and that's with a quarterback such as CJ. Like, that was impressive to see how far he took that team. So I do think it's a possibility, and I don't mind those comparisons to the Texans, because I do think it's a, maybe not the model franchise, but it's definitely a franchise that for teams that are looking at rookie quarterbacks, it should be a consideration.
I think the Texans model kind of skewed, right? People are looking at it like, oh yeah, they turned it around so quickly, and they didn't, right? Their rebuild started in 2021. They took Davis Mills in that draft, and that draft class,
week five.
What happened?
Who carved up New England week five of that year?
Holy cow, that game was ridiculous. Yeah, but they had Davis Mills, and that's where I start the clock on their rebuild. So everyone's like, oh yeah, they, you know, they built around first, you know, and then they got their quarterback. I'm like, no, they took their quarterback. He sucked, right? So then they
went for your rebuild.
Exactly. And then so they, you know, they then went out and the next year they got some skill position players. But it wasn't really moving the needle like that anyway. It wasn't until they went out and got their quarterback that everyone's all of a sudden like, oh, look, this is such a great team. They built such a great offense. And I just think about where we were this time last year, right, with the Texans. And this is where I'm just like, you guys just got to think back a year prior to where you're all like, oh, they did it so fast. Going into last year's draft, they didn't have a wide receiver that anyone would even talk about, right? Because the top receiver there was Nico Collins, and at that point, he had like something like 600 career yards. It wasn't anything crazy. Their best player was Dalton Schultz, who signed late into the offseason last year, coming off of the franchise tag in Dallas. And, you know, everyone's like, he's fine, but ... Robert Woods was the starting receiver for them last year, like on paper. Like, that was one of their starting wide receivers. So no one going into last year, absolutely no one was like, hey, this is going to be such a good offense. Just look at it. They went out, they got their quarterback, and all of a sudden everyone's like, whoa, look at what a great team they built. And I'm like, yeah, a good quarterback will do that. They will make your team look good. Like that, duh. You know, like
I'm gonna stitch that, and then when the Patriots draft a quarterback at 3, that's the sound I'm gonna put on my Twitter when it happens. It's gonna be McGarvin right there with the.
I don't get it. I think people are way overthinking the whole quarterback thing. They're like, oh, just build a good team, and I'm like, how many good teams are built without quarterbacks? It literally doesn't happen. No one without a quarterback, even if they have all of these great pieces on offense, no one without a quarterback is like, hey, that's a great team. Minnesota's a perfect example. Right now they have no quarterback. Right now it's Sam Darnold. And no one is calling them a great team. They're like, oh, they have some good players. Yeah. But I bet if they get themselves a quarterback, everyone's going to be like, oh, great offense. And I might be inclined to agree with them because I'm like, oh, they have all the pieces in place. But if you don't have a quarterback, I don't want to hear about how good you are. You're not. You have no quarterback.
It's exactly the thing. It's like, who's throwing? You can get a receiver, even a tackle. But who's the tackle protecting? Who's the receiver catching the ball from? Like,
exactly.
I think that's like such a thing that's overlooked, that it's like, yes, we need those two pieces, but I don't think you can truly have a well-rounded team without a star, like without a quarterback who can kind of do it, who can do it all. And, you know, obviously we know Mac wasn't the piece in New England. I hope he goes on. I think he could go on to have a lot of success at another team, whether it be with Jacksonville or another team after Jacksonville. I think he needs a year to get back to his fundamentals, get back and just do it. I definitely see him going on, but it just wasn't here. It wasn't in New England. And with that, I think also the thing was that, you know, he was looked at as that person after Brady for so long. Yeah. You know, we all knew it. He was brought in to be like the next Tom Brady in New England.
Meanwhile, but Cam, I'm sorry, I just wanted to contract, so I'll make a good point. Because I feel like with Cam, it was, hey, just be a glue guy for this year, considering you were signed at the end of June. You know, where it was just like Cam had no pressure on him. Mac had all the pressure in the world on him. That's just what I wanted to add.
Yeah, I definitely think it was that pressure, but I also think it was almost like he had this title of like being the Tom Brady, the next one, without having touched the football yet. The minute they called his name at the draft, it was like, oh, here he is. And he had a great rookie season, which I think contributed to that. You know, he was strong. He took him to the playoffs. I'm not comparing him to CJ, but, you know, you think of a team that had a rookie quarterback and still made it to the playoffs that year. That was the Patriots in 2021. They did that. And then, obviously, everything went to shit. But, like, from there, it's like you saw it happen. So it's not like a unrealistic possibility. And also, like, I just think it would be amazing to see that. I don't think the Patriots are going to be a playoff team this year. I'm by no means saying that, but I'm saying that I would love to see a team that's more than 4 wins, especially under this new coach that everyone speaks so highly of. I cannot stress it enough. Like, I asked Elliot Wolf about it and he was like, I want to answer this question. Thank you for asking. Yes. And then went on this whole big thing about how he loves what he's seeing from Mayo. So it would just be a really, like, it'd be great to see after everything. And especially like, cause I'm still not set that getting rid of Bill was the right call. I don't think I'll ever be fully set on that decision, but I still don't want to see this team just like fall off the deep end because of that happening. Like, I have a lot of respect for Gerard Mayo, and I think he is a great head coach. I think he's been set up for this. So it's like, you know, kind of like the both worlds collide in that way.
One other thing I want to bring up quickly before I actually want to change subjects is, no matter how good or bad this team is in 2024, this team has a vibe to it that, like, they're there having fun. They're there, like, letting loose. Like, I've been seeing the videos coming from, like, Kendrick Bourne through the locker room and stuff. Like, him with the receiver room. Like, I know everyone right now is saying, it's like, oh, hey, we have NFL receivers. Everyone's going, oh, like, you have this, this, or this. But it's like, yeah, no, we know the receiver is a need for this team. But this team has a cohesiveness that you can only bond. And a big part of that cohesiveness went this season from the field to retirement to now with the team in a full-time coaching role, which just bring back all the former guys. Matthew Slater, I don't know if they're going to be able to pry Devin McCourty away from NBC, but we'll see. And obviously Dante Hightower's back, which even the videos of them walking in and stuff, like I think Hightower's walking in with Stevenson or someone else like that. Like, there's that real sense of this team has a real Arizona Cardinal sense to where they may not be the best team on paper, but they're going to play. And I know Jonathan Gannon faced a lot of scrutiny last year. I don't know if you remember that speech he gave where it's like, did you drive or did you take the bus? Did you have that fire in that gut like that everyone chirped him for, including me? But towards the end of the year, the Arizona Cardinals, once Kyler Murray came back, they were a tough team to play against. And I can see New England being that, to where, look, Arizona went into Philadelphia week 17 of the season and they beat them handedly. So I can see a team like that this year in New England where it's just they may not be the best team and they may lose a lot of football games, but they're building something that towards 2025, 2026, fans can get excited for again. And also, here's the other thing too. This team's going to have a lot of money to spend next offseason. And you know what? The wide receiver free agency class is a little bit better next year.
Yeah, I do think that's a point that everyone's overlooking, and like, I do think that a trade is possible. I'm not going to say it's going to happen or it's not going to happen. I know they're inquiring. I
Pigeon
mean,
Brown.
Elliot Wolf directly told us that, and a trade is possible at any point. I think, at this rate, before the draft, if they could make a trade with that second round pick, if it's a top receiver, like if we're talking Brandon Ayuk or. Obviously it's not going to happen because they've said they're keeping him, but someone like T. Higgins, those are two names that immediately come to mind that it's like, okay, you probably were going to go wide receiver or tackle, but you're probably going to go wide receiver with that pick, if I had to guess, to get some weapons and okay, use that pick and get a veteran wide receiver who's insane. Even if you have to send one more later round pick, I do think that could be a very solid trade option. I just don't know if teams are going to be willing to listen to that because I think a lot of teams aren't willing to part with their receivers right now.
Find a stupid GM and you can do it because dysfunctional teams do dysfunctional things, like David Tepper looking for the person who's been making his team ass for the last 4 years, which is one of McGarvin's favorite tweets.
My goodness, I'm so down on the Panthers. I've always like casually followed them, and the minute Tepper took over, you just saw the decision making. You're like, oh no, he sucks. And
The
it's tough when
SpongeBob
you have
photo I
an
was talking about, by the
owner.
way.
The what?
The SpongeBob cop photo.
Yep. And he's always looking to blame somebody. He's always, he's obviously cycling through coaches. Doesn't appear to be very, very well liked by the people he employs. Not that it matters. You don't necessarily need to be liked by the people under you. You're the owner. Do your thing. But at the same time, I wonder if Carolina will ever do a thing again with him at the controls, because he's very involved for an owner who, you own the football team, not the football stuff. And he's just, from all reports, just very involved. So we'll see. We'll see how Carolina does it. But ooh.
I think you talk about involved though, and I don't think it was as it was portrayed, but something that really stood out to me was like how the Dynasty series made it look like Kraft was so much more involved than I think it actually was in some
Yeah.
regards. I do think that was something in the Dynasty series that was interesting. Like that was just what first came to my mind when you were saying that was like, I think about all these decisions that they made,
Absolutely.
and I'm just sitting
And
here like, well.
we always knew, Kraft was an owner who was kind of out of the football stuff, right? You hired the football people, let the football people
Yeah.
do the football stuff. So it's just
Well,
a
he's a
weird,
fan. He's a
yeah,
fan.
absolutely. So it's just a little weird seeing, the documentary come out, and he's like, oh, basically he was boots on the ground for the whole thing. And then to pivot right after that, like, hey, I just let the football people do the football stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but your show just said that wasn't the case. Whatever, man.
Yeah, that was all weird. Even too, like that article that came out this week where it's like, I don't think he called Arthur Blank directly and said, "Hey, don't hire," but Arthur Blank probably called him due diligence. Like, when the three of us are going for a job, like you call references. You say, "Hey, should we hire him?" And he probably Kraft, I doubt Kraft said directly, "Don't hire him," but I think he probably said, like, "Hey, Bill's probably gonna be a little curmudgeon-y. Bill's probably gonna be this. Bill maybe this." We also know that Bill's a very grumpy man and like
Also,
he's stuck in his ways. So that's
yeah.
where I think ESPN took it. They take it out of context, and the rest of the league's gonna look at it and go, boom. But one thing I will commend Robert Kraft for is the fact that owner survey that came out, that he
Yeah.
said, "Hey, I'm gonna get 50 million of my own money." Clark Kent, that's a message to you. I'm gonna get 50 mil of my own money because you know what? Hey, we gotta renovate the gym. The gym's no longer gonna be this like old dungy thing because you know what the gym is. You need a state-of-the-art athletic facility. So that's where I command Kraft on that. He knows that, like, hey, I got to get better because I'm not. That survey was a slap in the face to me.
He looks at that team like a family. That is something I think is incredible that Kraft does. I will commend him any day of the week for this. Is that, obviously the one thing that the Dynasty series did really well was that it showed how much he cares about the team. We all knew it, but I think like this took it to a whole new level of respect for I mean, he bought the parking lots around the stadium because of how much he wanted the dang team. Like,
yep.
That's commitment. It's genius, but it's commitment to see this as a long-term plan. And I think that's, you know, you see it as like this fan who wants this to happen. And he, every player that walks in there, he wants it to be a perfect experience for them. He wants the, you know, when they're losing, he's pissed because they're losing. He wants everyone to be happy walking into Gillette Stadium every day. So I do think seeing that owner survey was like, whoa, something needs to change. And there are parts of it that are never going to be exactly what they, you know, the players are, it's never going to be like the top tier. You know, there's these expectations some players have that you just like, it's not possible for given the space of Gillette Stadium for them to fulfill. But he's going to do everything in his power to get that grade up and at least like make him happy. I mean, childcare is a big one. There's definitely going to be a change in that, I'd expect next season, which there should be. I mean, that's a very smart and good thing that I like that touched upon in the survey. So it's just things like that where I do commend Kraft on his when it comes to the owner, the owner's role. I think he takes that tenfold.
He knows, like, hey, and I also called out Clark Hunt because I don't know if you guys saw, but the whole stuff with them trying to get a new stadium, and he's worth $25 billion, and he's like, hey, I'll give this much of the team to do this. And, like, even to, I don't know if you guys saw as well, but Terry Pegula came out and said, hey, I'm selling a stake in the Buffalo Bills, which, again, there's a kid in Western New York, McGarvin, that's just been down bad ever since the season ended.
poor guy.
Yeah. But with the Kraft stuff, like, the fact that these owners, to an extent, they care about what their fans think and what the players think, it's huge. Because even, I remember, I know a lot of this stuff gets flat, but Chris Sims said, like, because Belichick comes from that Parcells tree, and when Chris, as a child, would go to Giants walkthroughs in the 80s, you keep him as far away from the team and that as possible, because Bill Parcells is probably going to curse someone out and say some stuff, but now it's more family-friendly, you got to get with the times. The one I still find hilarious was the fact that the Chargers were charging people like for childcare, but everyone's saying, well, you have to employ Antonio Cromartie and Philip Rivers. I mean, that's what happened.
That's an absolute fact. There's like 28 kids coming in every day. You're like, oh, boy.
That's funny.
Yeah, that, I don't know. The survey thing is interesting because the survey came out last year and it was, you know, similar to the stuff that we saw this year. So, you know. I would like to see the action behind it. Kind of is what it is. Kraft is in a kind of a weird spot right now as far as like his public image. So I would assume that he follows through on this and that'll, you know, curry some favor there. But, you know, I guess we'll see.
He's got the money to do it. And I'm not just talking, and it's not cap space this time we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know, too, that since the owner – because obviously since the last time I know Sophie and I spoke, I wish we'd waited a couple days because the owner's meeting happened and, like, chaos decided to break with, you know, stuff like the hip-drop tackle being banned. Like, hey, they're playing a game on a Friday night in Brazil. Hey, they're going to be playing Wednesdays on Christmas this year, which really causes the player safety double standard, if you ask me. Like, I love it. Don't get me wrong.
So many double standards. So many double standards in player safety across this league.
But I look at the fact that, look, those reports came out and that, which I'll say this too, because I've been pumping their tires a lot. I'd hope to get either one or both of them on this day. But we talk about, obviously, McGarvin, A to Z Sports does great Patriots coverage. We all know that. But the Boston Herald too, like those, because both Callahan and Kai were front and center during there. Yeah. And the fact that Kraft spoke at the, not just spoke to the media, but spoke to Boston media at the owners' meetings, is significant. He could have hid. He could have, you know, stayed out of the limelight and let it die down. No, the fact that he faced it head on and all the reports, which, look, yes, was the dynasty a bit of a fluff piece for Kraft? Yes. Could it have gone better? Yes. The way it ended, where it was Tom's this, Tom's here, and Belichick left at the end of the season after they went 4-13. It wasn't the best well done. But you know what? The fact that he's owning up to everything kind of shows that, like, hey, you know what? Maybe I did screw up. Maybe I did have this bad stage. And then also, too, I know everyone's saying, oh, ownership's not involved. Ownership, I think, is involved to an extent, but I don't think they're calling the shots. I think Kraft has enough trust in Elliot Wolf. He has enough trust in the scouting department and the coaching staff to know, hey, we're going to do what's right. And then hopefully now, and for everyone, because also, my ADD acting up, but one other point I want to make about the first round. I have a friend of mine here from high school who's also a big Patriots fan. And he's saying, like, oh, like, should the Patriots draft Marvin Harrison Jr.? And I said, no. And the way I compared it is, It's if you have the money for, like, I don't know, a Hyundai Santa Fe, and you go out and you buy a Lamborghini. You don't do that. It's kind of like a few years ago when the Steelers drafted Najee Harris. The first round, unless you're a team that's ready to win now, you draft for what you need and not for what you want. The Steelers could have gotten a better player in 20, not discrediting Najee, but you could have gotten a better player that you needed at the time. So with the Patriots, I'm just going to say this. It is all about quarterback at the end of the day. Round two and round three, you can go get a tackle. Patrick Paul from Houston, there's Kingsley from BYU, and the receiver class is endless, which I did see one mock draft today that made me cry, which has Ladd McConkey going to the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm just like, no, that's not fair, okay? It's not fair. Have them take, I don't know, Xavier Worthy or Keon Coleman. That would be fine. But Ladd McConkey, no. Buffalo or Kansas City can avoid him. That's all I care about. But we know at the end of the day, I have faith in this ownership group to do the ownership group and management to do the right thing Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And we just got to see if the cards play right and hopefully everything goes our way.
Exactly. Absolutely. I'm excited. I'm sure my excitement will ramp up as, you know, as this week, you know, comes down. But I'm really excited about Friday, right? Because round one, like I said, it's kind of is what it is. And I know people are – I've seen a few mocks with the Patriots, you know, trading up. I know Evan Lazar had one where they traded up to 27 to take Adonai Mitchell. I don't really see a trade up coming. And I'm advocating for this. I want to trade back at 34. I think you can probably get a pretty good player in the early 40s, and you can pick up an additional, you know, fourth round pick, and you can kind of parlay that into something more if you need a trade up in the third or whatever. I've always liked that approach, right? The approach that we've known from Bill, where you kind of just like move up and down the board. Don't just kind of take your picks as they come, but go out, target guys that you want, go up and get them. So I'm kind of hoping for a little bit of that. The Patriots just don't have a ton of draft capital. I think they have eight picks overall. That's, you know, one in each round and two in the sixth or something to that effect. At that point, you know, make some trades, you know, fill out the roster. They only have like 70 something players, on their roster right now. Right. So, you know, it's going to be a big, you know, UDFA class if they only make eight selections. So as far as I'm concerned, you move back from 34, kind of fill out the picks there and rebuild your young core, get a pipeline going.
That was something Elliot Wolf emphasized, by the way, on Thursday when he spoke with the media, was like getting more picks. He brought that up when someone asked him about trading the first overall pick, but it can apply to any pick throughout the draft, is getting those more picks. I definitely agree. I don't know if a trade up would be as likely just because they'd lose another pick. And that's, I don't think, something I can quite afford right now, but I do see trade downs being likely. I kind of am hopeful. I don't know if the second round is the time to do it. I think you grab that, and if one of those top tackles is available, you grab that, a top receiver, whatever it may be. But after that, any of the later rounds, I say go for it. Because my whole thing about the later rounds in the draft is I like those prospects, even sometimes a little bit more than these guys that are so highly talked about. And that's just because there's, you know, I have a piece coming out tomorrow that says this exact thing. It's like you can find that diamond in the rough because there's no expectations, but so much to prove. So much, because these are guys you don't know about, you know, that no one's talking about, and that, you know, no one's thinking, oh yeah, there you have a spot on the roster. I mean, you think about DeMario Douglas, that no one thought he was going to make the roster. A sixth round pick out of Liberty? Who thought that this was going to be like one of the Patriots' star receivers last season? Which is saying something in itself, but like, still, I mean, he's a very good receiver. I talk about him. I think he has so much potential, and I think he can really develop in New England. But that being said, like, no one saw that coming. And then he just goes all out at training camp. And those are the guys that I think just, like, can get people excited and can just, like, start this whole new thing. Because those later round picks, like I said, no expectations, but so much to prove.
Two things I want to say quickly. One is I don't know if I'm a fan of him in three, but Gonzo switching to zero is just
that's pretty clean. Yeah, it's pretty clean.
I'm just happy they're letting him go to zero. It's so very exciting. I'm okay with Douglas at three. I think he wanted a single digit.
Yes. The other one is there's one trade back scenario at 34 I think could happen. And that's if, for some reason, Michael Penix falls on the day two. Because I think we're going to see someone supposed to go – well, because Michael Penix, I don't even want to say supposed to go day one. He's kind of a wild card in all this. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're going to see Caleb, you're going to see Jaden, you're going to see Drake, you're going to see JJ. All those guys are going to go within the top 10. Michael Penix is that weird wild card, that Lamar Jackson-ish, which I still say this behind the first three, Michael Penix is my QB4. I've said that since January. If there's a team that's in that mid-level quarterback tier, and say if Penix is still there and they're calling, offering, I don't know, 2 seconds or even a second, a sixth, and like a third next year, that's when you take the trade. If you have a quarterback that falls, if you have an elite talent that falls from, because it's going to happen. We all know it's going to happen. Someone's going to do a stupid reach and take a player that they're not supposed to take. It may work out, kind of like, you know, last year Iowa faced a lot of criticism with not Iowa, Detroit, for taking Jack Campbell out of Iowa. I think he was 18 or 16. I think it was 18.
Yeah.
Right after the Patriots took Gonzo. But a pick like that can happen. And that's not discrediting Jack Campbell. I'm just saying those picks that people kind of scratch.
He's not very good. It's okay to say. Yeah. He's not very good yet. Yes, he is raw. I think linebackers, there's an adjustment period with linebackers that doesn't get talked about as much as, like, everyone's like, oh, yeah, with a tight end or with an offensive lineman, oh, they're going to need a little time. Then you take linebackers, everyone's like, oh, yeah, he sucks. He's not good. I'm like, he's not good right now. He'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, even with the Patriots, with everyone, like, so that's where those picks are going to happen, to where if Michael Penix drops, 34, he's still there. I guarantee you a team like, I don't know, Vegas or – maybe Denver takes him, but if Vegas or Denver, someone of that elk, is needy for a quarterback, that's when I think they make the call to Elliott Wolf and saying, hey, what do you want for 34? And the Patriots can then they can take advantage of them because they fully on know well what they're going to do. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but now retired, legendary, just simply NFL reporter, go Peter King, always was with the team on draft night. In 2017, he was with the Niners. And there's full proof that Lynch, there's a guy named, I'm blanking on his name, he's an Indian guy who works for the team. Him, Shanahan, and Lynch, their thing was always Solomon Thomas. Did Solomon Thomas work out? No. But they knew what the Bears wanted, and they took advantage of them. And remember, they fleeced the Bears to move up from 3 to 2. So I'm just out here saying now, that's what I'm saying it can happen, because Elliott Wolf knows. They need a quarterback. They may be better than us, but they're not like a ready-to-compete team. If it's a ready-to-compete team, you hang up the phone and just say no, 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 no. But if it's a team like a Vegas or a Denver, grease the wheels.
Yeah, I think that's a great thought. I completely agree with you. With Penix in particular, I'm so curious to see if he falls, because I know that the medicals matter a lot more to the teams than they do to fans, right? Because we're always like, take him anyway. But does the team, you know, look at his injury history, you know, look at their medicals, and we don't know what, you know, what people have him as far as his medical grade. Because, right, we usually don't even find that out till like during the draft or after the draft. There are players who fall. You know that last year, Darnell Washington, the tight end out of Georgia, and people were like, oh, he was getting first round buzz. And then, you know, by the time the second round rolled around, still wasn't there. And it wasn't until the start of the third that Ian Rappaport dropped the report that there was concerns about his medicals. So I'm curious to see where Penix falls, but I got to imagine if he's there at 23, Minnesota just kind of take him and go, right? Like, you really ain't got much else. Like, what do you have to lose? He's your second first-round pick. You don't have a quarterback on the roster. You have Sam Darnold. Let's be so for real with that. Just kind of take him at 23. So I'm curious to see if he falls out of the first. My gut says yes, but I'm so curious. I know that Bo Nix is another quarterback kind of getting that first-round hype. That needs to not happen. I think he will be available day two for sure at the top of the second. I just don't know if a team is looking at their draft board like, hey, you got to go get Bo Nix. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen. So I think if Penix falls, I agree with you. I think that's going to, you know, increase the chances that the Patriots trade back from 34. But I could also see it happening for a wide receiver, especially one of the Texas boys, right? We know that Adonai Mitchell's going through the mud right now. He's being slunk through the mud with regards to his diabetes and, you know, people treating him like a child. He doesn't know how to take care of it. I'm like, hey, I mean, come on, he's a world-class athlete. he has been dealing with this for a while. It's not like brand new to him or anything like that. Yeah. He will figure it out. He's, you know, like he's a grown up. He'll be all right. but if say that does stick and he does fall, I can see a team, you know, with him on their board thinking, yo, we should go up to 34 and get him. So I could see that happening as well. I'm so curious to see how it all unfolds. We know there's going to be a run on offensive tackles in the first. So that's going to push down some players that we all think should go in the first round. You think of someone like, you know, Xavier Worthy with that speed. He's someone who has the best way I termed it was he has day two tape with first round speed, and that'll usually push you up because 4.21 is 4.21. You can't teach that. So I can see that happening. A player like Troy Franklin, goodness gracious, bodied out of Oregon. He's another player that I think he's a better athlete than he is a receiver. And I know that's not really a popular opinion. I'm not impressed with him, but he's someone I could see kind of being there at 34. Because right now, a lot of the mocks have him in that range, right? A lot of people have him at, you know, 31, 32 to Kansas City or in that range there if they trade back. He's someone I could see being there at 34 and a team being really excited about that athletic profile and thinking we can make something happen here. So I think there will be opportunities to trade down. All this to say, I think there will be opportunities to trade down from 34. I'm just so curious to see who's there and who's really motivated. I think back to last year's draft, we had a trade. Was it start day two or day three? It was like the very first pick of the day. I think it was the Friday. So I think it was the second round pick. There was a trade that happened prior to the
start. For Levis or for Michael Mayer, I think.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, cool. Like it's going to happen. Like their teams are going to see what's left at the end of the day. And I think 34 is a premium position to be there. I know 33 with Carolina there, there's a chance they take Xavier Leggett out of USC, right? Because they need a wide receiver. If he's there at 34, I would take him. If he's not, I would fully endorse a trade back.
Put McGarvin in the war room. This is what
I've learned. You do not want me in that war room. Some of my draft takes, man, there's some players I just like really believe in. I'm like, this guy's going to be so good. And then you're like, oh, he sucks. And you're like, a player like Hakeem Butler. Oh, I thought he was going to be so good. Even now he's in the UFL and every week I'm just like, soon, you will prove me right soon.
He'll be like 45 and McGarvin's ready for like that Tom Brady come out of retirement.
Like he's coming soon. It'll be here. Yeah.
We'll be 10 years from now. And he's like, Hakeem Butler, just wait for his
name. He's going to be so good. Just watch. Yeah. He's one of those players for me. I'm just like, I'm not giving up the dream. He's going to be so good. Just watch. Just watch.
By the way, the person from San Francisco, his name is Prag Marathi. He's the president of the 49ers Enterprise, and he's the EVP of football operations. So kind of an important role.
Yeah, for kind of a big deal. For
yep, kind of a big deal. But I just always remember that Peter King clip. The other thing I want to say is I feel like Bo Nix is what you tell AI to generate what the All-American quarterback looks like.
Ah, that is good. He has an NPC face.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I thought of that when you said it. I'm just like, yeah. He has that look, like the spike, like the blonde spiky hair, and the big white teeth, the
big
smile.
big goofy smile. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like the guy that you think is like your prototypical like star quarterback jock. He's an asshole.
He looks like someone who would play the mean quarterback in a high school movie. You know what I mean? Like that's the Disney face he Channel has. And I'm like, yeah, there it is.
He's a Disney Channel high school.
Yeah, exactly. Like stereotypical bully. He calls people nerd and like pushes them into the lockers.
Slams their books down and is just like, yeah, nerd. But you know what? The other thing I want to say too is because with the Patriots so far, I just want to tie it back to them. And also, I'll say this too: the one player that is my Hakeem Butler is Ronnie Perkins. I was just waiting.
He's gonna be good. It's coming. It's coming soon.
It's coming soon. McGarvin, can I have a list of these players? I actually need a list of players that
most of them are now in the UFL. You know, every Saturday, I'm just like, yeah, he's gonna be back in the league. He's gonna be so good. Just you wait.
There's two tweets from this week, though, I wanted to bring up on the show because they reminded me where I'm like, we need the draft to come. Someone decided to randomly tweet out, who's better, Jared Allen or Bruce Smith? And I'm just like, no, there's a reason Bruce Smith's the Hall of Famer, the greatest ever to it. And FanDuel, I don't think you guys saw this, they decided to tweet out yesterday, if Chase Claypool is not available, who's the best Steelers receiver of all time? And I'm like, Lord, I went to Liv Swan. Liv Swan. I went to John Stallworth. I went to Hines Ward. I went to, like, Santonio Holmes. Like, there's players that, like, could, like, I'm just like, this is where I'm like, we're at the point of the season where I don't even, like, people can say, like, oh, those are stupid things to say. You know what it is? Everyone's bored. Like, yeah. we want it to be draft night. We want to see, which, I don't know if you guys are like this. My mom's like this with watching the draft. She just likes, like, and I also like this with the draft, more than watching the players and their styles, but watching, like, you know, the single mom that raised them to be the man that they are. And she gets to, like, get all dressed up and, like, be like, this is my moment, too. Because for, like, a lot of these guys, it's, like, it's a dream come true in their upbringings and stuff like that. So that's, I like to focus on that and not ESPN, where it's, hey, you're drafted, congratulations. Here's a story about your uncle who was shot and killed in front of your eyes when you were 10 years old. I know it's a very morbid example, but I feel like ESPN likes to talk at heartstrings that way, and they've been doing it for years. But no, going back to the Patriots on this, this offseason so far, I know it's pissed off a lot of people, and there's a lot of people out there that have been, I'll say this, they've been fickle. There's been a lot of Patriot fans that are fickle out there. But you know what? Enjoy what you have now, because remember, and I'll say this too, and this might be a hot take, I'd rather be where the Patriots are than where the Buffalo Bills are. Because the Buffalo Bills are that they're that guy that Sophie keeps telling, I just like you as a friend and not trying to get to the playoffs. That's what the Buffalo Bills are. And I only use the example because, you know, like, guys don't friend zone girls, girls friend zone guys. I'm not trying to create biases or any gender differentiations. It's just that's how society works. But I say that because look at Buffalo this year, like last year. So all the hopes in the world, they're trying to get to a Super Bowl. What happens when they lose? Oh, hey, you're letting go of a lot of guys that people like. And now you – like, that's the thing, too. The Patriots have a number one wide receiver. You have a team with Josh Allen who's ready to go, and you don't have a wide receiver number one. And their fan – and I've seen a lot of their fans tweet this out, and I laugh so hard when they're like, we're expecting a wide receiver one, and on day one, we're going to take a defensive edge from Division II, Lenora Ryan, and you're going to like it, damn it. So
– that's a Belichick move is like
– yeah.
Like, yeah, that Division II, like, star guy in the first round.
You know why I said that's cool?
Because Kyle Duggar, of course.
Bingo.
Yeah, that, oh, man, that was interesting because that draft, he was a player that I liked, like, coming into the draft. I was like, oh, Kyle Duggar's so good. But he went to a Division II school, and, like, no one's paying any attention to Kyle Duggar. Yeah. And so when the Patriots took him, I remember that night, everyone was so upset. The timeline was not a nice place. I was like,
nope.
Oh, like, What's wrong with Kyle Duggar? And people, you know, were just like, oh, I don't even know who that is. And I'm like, oh, that's different. If you don't know who he is, then just say that you don't know who he is. Don't be mad at the pick because he's a great player just because you don't know who he is. And then once I remember it was like a week later, like all of the beat writers were just like doing all their tape breakdowns. Everyone's like, hold on, this guy looks great. And I'm like, he is. Like, it's going to be awesome. And by the end of his rookie year, everyone's like, that guy owns. I'm like, I know.
You need to screenshot those and like just totally blast people goodness. At the end of the season.
Because going back to Gerst's point, they are fickle. You know, they're like, ah, I need the results right now. I need it all. Like, guy needs to be amazing now. And I'm like, or it needs to be a guy I've heard of. And it especially bothers me the whole, like, oh, I don't even know who that is thing. Because I hate when people are like, oh, I don't know who that is. But they say that about, like, literally every player. Because I'm like, wait, well, do you watch college football? Yeah. Oh, no, I only watch the NFL. Of course you don't know who he is. They're like, what do you mean? Like, irritating.
The one thing I'll say, too, is I know Belichick is criticized for a lot of his drafting. He low-key cooked in that draft. When you go back and look at it.
The 2020 year, yeah.
2020 was a good year.
Kyle Duggar, signing extension. Josh Uche, probably the team-friendliest deal I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that was he got ripped off. That was crazy.
One I really liked. Penny Jennings as well.
Did he get ripped off? Because like, I feel like he could have gone somewhere else for more. So there has to be more to the story.
That's where I'm like, oh, like there's no way. Like there had to have been more out there. But maybe he just really, really wanted to be here.
There has to be like something. Andrews 2 years ago.
Yeah,
like we got David Andrews negotiations from 21.
Yeah,
I think it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's like Kraft also. I'm guessing there's some calls from Kraft involved. It's not just coming from. You know, it's the same thing where it's a family to him that he's like, I don't want to lose you.
Yeah. And the fact, too, that this year, and also, look, everyone who's pissed off. I love how Elliot Wolf's doing what Elliot Wolf's always done. And everyone right away is, well, you need to go get, because that's the thing with the whole fickle point that I wanted to make earlier is the whole how everyone now is like, you need to go get players from outside the organization. You're just re-signing people here. So how true is this new way? And it's just like, they're re-signing the players that they trust to carry on this aura and create an aura within the organization. There's a reason why Hunter Henry was brought back. I know that was one that could have gone either way. Alex Barth really had me on the wires where I was like, okay, we're losing him. When they resigned him, cool. Kendrick Bourne, cool. Yeah. Michael Wenu, coughed up the cash, cool, which you needed
there
to do.
There has not been one signing that the Patriots have, like, brought back, like, in terms of the players that they made an emphasis to bring back that I think I'm, like, that I was upset about. I think everyone I looked at and thought and was like, that was a good decision to bring back.
Yeah.
Like, and Jalen Mills knew it was gone. Thanks, Sophie, for that one.
Yeah. I mean, well, his reasoning made a lot of sense. He said, you know, he left because he thought he was still a starter and he wanted to go somewhere where he could start. And I kind of agree with him. He played really well last year. I know that he's such an easy punching bag and people love to clown on him for a lot of things that aren't necessarily true anymore. But one of them is they're like, oh yeah, he's not good in coverage. And I'm like, oh, you just didn't watch him last year. He cooked. He was a good player. So I'm glad he went to somewhere where he can actually play. Cause here it's tough because you're just not cracking that safety rotation. And if you're looking to get Marte Mapu more snaps, someone has to sit. And at this point, it simply has to be Jalen Mills. So
yeah,
that makes sense. Exactly. And I think
you have about like an insane safety on that roster that there's no way you're sitting him.
Exactly. You're like, I'm sick. We just got to play everybody. I think the thing with that whole like people being upset about re-signings, it didn't make sense to me because I'm like, well, they're not adding anyone, right? They're not like bringing in any free agents. They kind of took the free agency off because they did bring in my guy, KJ Osborne, number two. They did, you know.
Told you,
they,
McGarvin's in the war room. I told you.
Like, I'm in their ears. I'm just, hey, guys, bring him in. But I think that, you know, people are like, oh, you know, they should bring in other people. If we see that their free agency plan doesn't include a lot of external free agents because they're trying to rebuild through the draft right now, they think the roster is kind of bottomed out. And when a roster bottoms out, you build through the draft, not through free agency. I think if that's your plan, then it makes sense that all of your big moves are re-signings because you want to establish a culture like, hey, you know, you come here, you play well, we'll reward you financially or, you know, with some long-term security. And that's exactly what they did. So I don't get the whole like, oh, why are they paying these guys? I'm like, well, who else are you going to pay? Like, you have like $1 billion in cap room and no one to spend it on. Spend it on the guys that are already here.
Great.
And next year, there's only three, maybe, I don't know, one. No, that's the year after. There are only three contracts next year that I look at already to where they're not must extends, but like they should extend them. This year, that list that was at like 10 or 11 guys where it's just like, hey, New England needs to bring them back. Next year, it's just Christian Barmore, which is probably going
to
be a hefty
bet. Oh, that needs to happen this year. I think the price is just going up. They need to pay him like next week.
I agree.
Like, yeah, let's get on it. Let's get on it.
I'm just saying, guys. I'm saying guys that are free agents. That's all I'm trying to go for. Like guys that have the free agency tag. It's him. It's Ramondre, and it's number 9, Matthew Judon, who got attacked by a police dog today for some reason on Instagram.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, go check his story out. He was in like the full get up and the video was really grainy, but you could clearly tell like he was
I couldn't tell what that was going on. That was that. He also, I just saw he got a new necklace, like a new chain, and it's from his like iconic like celebration where he goes like that across his, it's so
oh
good.
Yes, I'm looking at the chain right now.
Yeah,
that
see
is,
it? It's sick.
That's sick. Goodness. I thought you were gonna name Jabril Peppers.
I did too. He's a must for me.
Oh, he's a must, but those are just the three that came to my mind. I forgot about Peppers. Those were, and then Ramondre's the other one. But Ramondre's on that fence of like, if they don't bring him back, I'm not going to be mad.
Yeah.
But if they brought him back, he's in that Josh Uche for me next offseason. Yeah. You know, where like I'll accept it if he walks, but if he stays,
that's cool too. Yeah,
it's great. But Jabril Peppers is one for I think on field but off field. And
those three defensive players to me were the first. That was what I thought of when you mentioned the three players. Again, I completely agree with what you said about Ramondre. He's a great player. If you can keep him, keep him. But if he does walk, your priority should be on those three defensive guys because, like, you've had, despite all the issues this team has had, that defense has really not, it's had some bad games. But throughout it all, it's been a pretty solid top tier defense. And you got to credit those three guys with a lot of it, especially this past season. Jabril Peppers to me is just like a guy, like, don't let this guy walk, especially him. Like he does not stop.
Yeah.
He's like, I remember like he came into the locker room, his entire arm was like bubble wrap bandaged. Like it was, you know, we thought this guy was going to be out for like a weekend. And I was like, oh my gosh, like what happened? Like, are you gonna be out? He's like, oh no, I'll be out there tomorrow. Like he just doesn't care. He wants to be playing. And it's, And when he plays, like, it's the no days off mentality. That's just a guy that I've always been very high on for the Patriots to keep if you can.
Christian Barmore as well. I feel like, because I always say, Sophie, there's a wonderful time of year that's like between minicamp and training camp where I either say you're either in the news for two reasons. One, you're getting paid, or one, you got arrested. And that's, I know it's a bad thing to say, but unfortunately it happens in the NFL. A lot of the guys, some of them do stupid things. That's when I feel like you can hear the news of thing getting paid, of when Barmore gets paid. You know, like middle of June, right before training camp. Like, that's when the extension could kick in. Like, if they, I think if they wait until February, the price tag is just going to be way too significant.
If he, I mean, and we saw when he came back from his injury in 22, right? Because he missed missed the middle of the season with his knee injury.
Shoulder and elbow.
And he wasn't playing well prior to that, but when he came back, he was an absolute force. And then all of last year, an absolute force. I think if we're just looking at the last year and a half and ask yourself, can he do it again? The answer is, yeah, probably. At which point, he's going to be very expensive. So go ahead and get that done early. You know, give him the $20, $22 million and just, you know, get that allocated. Because like I said before, who else are you paying? Nobody. Yeah.
Maybe CeeDee Lamb, but we'll wait and see on that one. Just because I know he's in a contract dispute. That's my wishful thinking. Like, if he does this, you will see me, like, just happy dance on this podcast for like a complete year straight, because I'm just putting that name out into the sphere, because I know he hasn't re-signed with the Dallas Cowboys yet, and the Dallas Cowboys don't have the money. One other point I wanted to make, and this is a take that I've been sitting on for a very long time that I'm ready to say on this podcast, and it has nothing to do with our team. It has something to do with the Kansas City Chiefs. Them, if they had lost Chris Jones, they would be a much worse team than they were last year.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. He's their second best player on the roster. He is. Yeah, that was one of those.
I know it's a bit of a lukewarm team, but I know it's a bit of lukewarm, but I just always looked at that as like, and because it ties back, sorry to cut you guys off, but it brings back to the Barmore stuff where players of Chris Jones and Christian Barmore's elk and will, you don't teach that. You don't tell people to do that. They're born to do it. They are big men who were put on this earth to hurt quarterbacks. And the way they do it and the skill that they do it with, you can't let those players walk. Like, I know everyone likes to look at the Super Bowl this year as the whole Patrick Mahomes his eyes just opening up when they took the ball. If Chris Jones doesn't get that stop on third down, we don't know what happens in that football game. Yeah. But that's neither here nor there.
Yep.
Before we finish, McGarvin, I remember there was an activity from a while ago. I know Sophie and I have our lists ready, but guys, we've been waiting to do this for a while. We wanted to do this with the three of us here. We have compiled lists, each of us, of our top 10 Patriots from the dynasty. This is basically lasting from anywhere from 2000 to the year 2019. 10 players, we all have them there. So I'm going to go last just because I want to have the first of you two guys go first. So whoever wants to go first, take it away.
All right, I'll start. So my top 10, we'll start with 10 and go to 1. Start number 10, I got Julian Edelman. I think he really keyed the second act of the dynasty, right? Going from someone who was signed to a one-year, like $800,000 deal as an afterthought in 2013 or 2012 heading into 2013, to giving that performance that he did in a year where Amendola was supposed to, you know, Welker walked, Amendola was supposed to replace him, Amendola pulled his groin. It was just a tough year, and Edelman really stepped up. And I think from 13 straight through up until 2020, he was your most reliable receiver. I know that Wes Welker had a better career than he did, especially statistically. But Wes Welker kind of pisses me off, like, personally. So, like, you know, fuck him. Edelman takes the number 10. Number 9, I got Ty Law, but you can actually kind of put him or Stephon Gilmore there. I think whoever the best cornerback was on the team can take that slot. I put Ty Law because of the impact he had at the early start of the dynasty, but I really didn't watch, you know, like, at that point, right, when he was doing what he was doing, I was like 9 or 10. You know what I mean? Like, it,
we were children.
Yeah, so it's like I didn't really get to watch him like that. As far as like in the moment, so that's why I put Stephon Gilmore, because he was that guy for me. Darrell Revis could go there, but it was only 1 year, great year, but yeah. Number 8, I got Matthew Slater. Obviously, duh, self-explanatory. Aw, yeah. Number 7, we got Willie McGinnis. he was a pass rushing monster, and he was a player that even when I was younger, I knew I was like, oh, that guy's very good. like he's getting it done over there. So real big on Willie McGinnis. Above that, we got Teddy Bruschi. He was the first jersey I ever owned, right? Number 54. Just a really great all-around player. Also, in sixth grade, he came to my elementary school, and he talked about, you know, about his was it sixth grade? Yes, it was sixth grade, where he talked about the stroke and kind of being out and kind of, you know, getting back to it. So that was cool seeing him in person. That was sick. Honorable mention, Joe Andruzzi, he gave the commencement speech at my college graduation, so that was cool. But, you know, he was just who he was. In my top five, I got Vince Wilfork, right? Big man, really, really light on his feet. I just, man. And he was so soft-spoken off the field that I was like, this guy, this is someone who, like, I wish he was my dad. You know what I mean? Like, and I just love big football players because I'm a big man myself, so, like, you know, fat guys getting it done. I'm like, yeah, I'm rooting for that guy. And then my top, you know, the top four kind of gets kind of obvious from there. I got Gronk at four. I would have had him higher, except like he missed the Super Bowl in 16 and the offense looks just fine. I know that, you know, I know the impact of player that he was and the impact of, you know, personality he had. But I also just don't, I've always been more defense than offense. So four is probably as high as we can go with a offensive player not named Tom Brady. Spoiler alert. Number three, we got Devin McCourty. I love Devin McCourty. I've always loved Devin McCourty after 2011. 2011, though, oh, he was on my shit list. All those interferences when he was still playing corner, holy shit. Every time I'm like, get this guy off the field. But, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about. So I was like, oh, cool. Transition to safety, really good. And he's another player who, when I think of the Patriots dynasty, when you think of the second act, I think, you know, Tom Brady, Dante Hightower, you know, Devin McCourty, that's the core that I think of. Number two, I got Tom Brady. I know, right? Everyone kind of, you know, you expect Tom to be number one. But like I said earlier, I'm more defense than offense, and he's obviously Tom Brady. He would have went number one, except that I kind of figured everyone else would have him at number one, so we put him at number two. Number one is Dante Hightower, my favorite football player of all time. Number 54, that is my guy, and now he is my linebackers coach, so sick.
You know what? I really like your list. Like, it's a little different than mine, but, like, for the most part, like, everyone you got on there is just – we're solid contributors that when you think of Patriots dynasty right away, you're like, yep, those are the guys. Those are the individuals that we look at towards this whole, like, the whole era of the dynasty.
Yeah, Randy Moss was someone who I wanted to add on mine. He just wasn't here long enough, I think, to justify it, but – he is the best receiver I ever watched in my lifetime. I know everyone will say Jerry Rice, but I'm only 31. I've literally not watched Jerry Rice play football. So outside of, like, obviously going back to the games, but, like, I didn't get to watch him when he was him. So I'm going to go with the guy I did get to watch when he was him, and that's Randy Moss.
Ms. Weller, what do you got?
Hold on. I had a muted mic situation. I didn't mute it, so I don't know how that happens. So for my first two, I'm going to go from the bottom up to, I did it a little differently, I'll be honest, where I did this based on both player overall and but also how they were during the dynasty, like, series. I also rated how they, like, spoke during that a little bit. So for 10, I have Ted Nugent, just because of the Tom Brady stories we got, because I freaking loved those. Those are incredible. 9 similar is Lawyer Malloy, for the sole reason that the one story of Bill Belichick that will forever live in my brain from the series was when Bill gave Lawyer his room during, which it was one of the Super Bowls.
New Orleans.
And Lawyer's like, guys, look at all this. And Bill's like in a tiny little room somewhere down the hall, whereas like Lawyer has the whole coach's room. I don't know. That really just cracked me up. I, too, put Hightower on my list. He was 8 for me. I think he's a great player. I'm a little more offensive-minded. That's just how I've always been when it comes to football, so it will probably show. Matthew Slater is probably my all-time favorite Patriot, just from someone who embodies everything you want in a football player on and off the field, and just a person. He was 7 for me. I have Teddy Bruschi at 6. Insane player. Willie McGinnis at 5. Again, it's a very similar list to McGarvin's, I'm going to be honest, except for my bottom two. Because this is when I started actually getting into more like the football play, but I had to give those two their honorable mentions for the insane stories they told, because that was like one of the saving graces of this series, because I didn't like it overall. for Vince Wilfork. Absolutely love that guy too. I always think back to one of the Super Bowls when it was Gerard Mayo's daughter who was at media day walking around with a microphone and going up to all the players. And she saw Vince and goes, "Uncle Vince!" And like runs up to him. And it's like this guy who like, it was, I just love that video. Vince Wilfork, another top Patriot in my opinion. I have Devin McCourty at 3. Mm-hmm. Also a guy that, you know, similar to, I think like Slater is more of like this guy off the field that you see. And I think everything Slater does was amazing. But when you look at on the field, McCourty was more of the on the field presence in terms of just an absolute menace. Rob Gronkowski at 2. Again, I don't think there's a better tight end in the league, at least from what I've been watching. Mm-hmm. That's a blocking tight end too. And I think a lot of tight ends like just don't do that anymore. They're just like, ooh, go down the field and just like body everyone out. But like, I felt like Gronk could do a little bit more than just that. Whereas he could also make these insane catches that you're like, there are 7 guys around you. How did you end up with the ball? And 1, we can all guess who it is. The same way, I would even put Bill and Brady tied actually for 1 for me. I think without either of those guys, you don't win 6 Super Bowls. And I will, I will die on that hill because I know it's a very big debate of whether that happens. And I think you take either one out of the equation, you're not winning.
Nope.
Yep.
Agreed. You know, I think there's some that I look at and I was like, that was an offensive game. Obviously, offense hasn't always been Bill's strong suit, but then the one that always comes to my mind is like that last Super Bowl that they won. That wasn't Brady. Like
that was Bill.
Brady got them the touchdown, whatever. That was Bill. Who holds the Rams to 3 points in the biggest game of the year? Bill Belichick. And you're going to tell me this guy doesn't have a coaching job this year? Like, are you kidding me? Go watch that damn film. Like I'm going to get so mad about it because it's like, it drives me crazy. This is an insane coach who's literally sitting on his ass at home with all this expertise.
Like on the Pat McAfee show. That's where he is this year.
That is not where he should be.
No. Before I get into mine, with Sophie Greatless, by the way, before I get into mine, the honorable mention I want to give is Rodney Harrison. Know that, look, he had, besides having the game-winning interception in Super Bowl 39, the other big reason for him as well is that he didn't come in expecting to be this player that he was, expecting to be the leader that he was. I know he takes a lot of flack considering what happened in Super Bowl 42 with David Tyree, but he came in when basically Bill told Lawyer Malloy, like, to get lost. He basically said, like, hey, I believe in you. You're an outcast from San Diego.
After he gave him the hotel room, too. Told
exactly. Him to lock.
Even after he'd given him the hotel room.
Yeah. But that's just it with Rodney. It's just everything I said too. He came in right away and embodied the Patriot way and what it was. Mm-hmm. My 10 is a little bit different. It's a guy that hasn't been mentioned on either one of your guys' lists, and that's Deion Branch. Just look, you don't win Super Bowl 39 without him. He's always a model of consistency. One of the better Patriot offensive weapons drafted in the Bill Belichick era. Obviously, Sandoval gets a lot of flack and criticism for that, but Deion Branch was a 2nd-round pick, I believe, out of Louisville. So he's there. 9 for me, it's Jules, just because, like, same reasoning as McGarvin, just model of consistency year in and year out. And their 3 Super Bowl wins. Who was
Jules
there?
Jules would have been on my list had I not picked my 2.
Year 2.
Like, if I had a.
Had Ted Nugent not made the list?
Listen, he only made the list for those Tom Brady stories. Like, we don't get the
Shadow Tech Mobile
story without it. Like, all this shit. I'm sorry. Those stories were too good. I had to give my 2 honorable mentions from the series. But no, Jules will always be on a forever list if I actually did this from not just a little bit of a joking standpoint.
And not my first ever jersey owned, but my first ever jersey bought with Griffin's adult money was a Julian Edelman Patriots jersey. So that's the other reason for it, too. And then number 8, I got Teddy. Same thing. It's just like he was there long before the Belichick got there. Just look. Leader on and off the field, original starter of the had the massive stroke, came back, finished his career off with the Patriots. Just, you know, one of those players when you think Patriot way, he's there. Same with the next guy, and that's Willie McGinnis. Just same thing, too. I know his exit was a little rough, but you know what? There's always a love there from Robert Kraft. He was the model Patriot linebacker. And honestly, 6 is the same thing, too. And 6 is my overall list wise, he's my second favorite Patriot besides 1, who I don't think is a shocker who my 1 is, but that's Dante Hightower. And I still say this too. Super Bowl 49, Super Bowl 51, they do not win those games if Dante Hightower doesn't make critical plays at critical moments. Strip sack, and I know everyone loves to talk about the Malcolm Butler interception, but who stopped Marshawn Lynch at the
Yeah,
1 yard
it's
line?
very, that is such a forgotten thing. Like with that Super Bowl, is everyone thinks about the interception, which was huge. Like Malcolm Butler, you got your flowers for that damn interception. But that is so true. Like Marshawn Lynch could have waltzed right into that end zone, and this is a whole different conversation.
Exactly. Number five for me. Number five, I had to put Vince just from. Just because I did change my list up a little bit. I did have Rodney in there, but I bumped Rodney down with Vince because I was just like, you know what? You got to do it. And also one of my favorite plays too, week two interception against the San Diego
Oh,
Chargers
my
in
goodness.
2011.
The one-handed one? Oh, God, what a play. I thought for certain he was going to score. He just ran out of gas.
Shout out to him and Dan Connolly for those. Number four for me is Ty Law. Like, look, he's a Hall of Famer, but here's the other thing too. And I know one thing we didn't touch on as well is Ernie Adams on Julian Edelman's podcast, which if you're a football nerd, listen to that damn thing.
When I saw the little teaser that it was for Ernie, like I was going back and forth with the Games with Names account because I was like, you did not bring Ernie Adams on your podcast. Like, you might have to have a heart attack. You did not do this to me.
But with Ty Law, though, because like the one line that always stands out to me from Ernie Adams in the Dynasty was, oh, we played to win the game because we knew we weren't going to win in overtime. Ty Law's pick six, a big reason why they won that first ever Super Bowl. Ty Law was a leader from, you know, from start to jump. He was always there. He was always the model of consistency. Same thing. I know I've been saying that for a lot of the Patriots, but that's what it is. The model of consistency has been the Patriot way. Number three for me is Gronk. It's pretty self-explanatory, too. Just, you know, year in and year out. Like, the fact that, and also my favorite Gronk play of all time is still the one-handed catch against Denver where Tom goes to him and just says, how the fuck did you catch that?
Gronk's best play for me is always going to be the touchdown he caught against the Broncos in that wind game, that Sunday night game in 2013. And then he like robot spiked it, and I was like, this guy's cool as shit. That's when I was like, yeah, this guy owned. Because at that point, he had been coming off of all of his all of those injuries. He had just lost the year prior when TJ Ward, dirty player, by the way, you know, went down on his knee against when he was still with the Browns, and he had just missed it. And it's taken him so long to get back to being Gronk. And then that wind game in 13, and you're just like, actually, they're doing all right.
Number two for me is someone neither of you have actually mentioned before.
Hold on. Matt Light.
Sure.
Mike Vrabel.
Adam
Vinatieri. No. Oh, okay.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Look, kickers are, he's an underappreciated kicker, but here's the thing. The divisional round game against Oakland, who makes the two kicks to send it to overtime and to win the game? Super Bowl 36, who makes the game winning kick? Super Bowl 38, who makes the game-winning kick? I know Tom Brady's a big reason they won those Super Bowls, and so are the defense, but Adam Vinatieri's foot is the reason why the dynasty truly
I
started.
I need a top 20 list to make this action.
I know. It's
you know, the worst part is I feel bad because I literally never even thought of him. I went through like 17 players, and I was like, 17 guys who deserve the top 10, and not once did Adam Vinatieri come up. And in fairness, neither did Steven Gostkowski, so I don't know. Just not really thinking about
Steven Gostkowski.
Well, if it's going to come to that, I would go Vinatieri deserves a spot over Gostkowski.
Yeah.
Gostkowski's a great kicker, but it's just Vinatieri made the big kicks at the big
and
moments.
Steven Gostkowski
like,
didn't have a big kicks to make, right? Like
if he did, it'd be a different conversation. But you think
he just didn't have the opportunities because, like, you know, neither of any none of the Super Bowls he was part of came down to a, you know, to a field goal. So it's just like, all right, well, he was here. He was here, and he kicked, and it was great.
Vrabel deserves a spot. You had Ty Law, but like Ty Law, you know, there's I could Matt Light, like there's so many guys.
I had Vrabel as my original 10 as well. I just needed more offensive players because I looked at the list and I was like, it's Tom, it's Gronk, and I'm like, oh boy, gotta get some offense in here.
You know who one guy is? He was here for a short term, but in his short term time was very good in his role.
JoJo LaFell.
And I was always like, well, yeah, but the one I was going for is Martellus
Bennett. Oh, my God, right? Holy, 2016, they don't win that Super Bowl without him. Gronk goes down, and the offense is just fine because Martellus Bennett was actually really good at doing all of the things they needed. He could block, he could catch, and you were like, sick.
Him dancing to the cheerleaders with Whitney Houston after they won Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship
me chills.
Game.
Oh, yeah.
I just want those moments back.
That's it.
And then number one for me is obviously Tommy, but there's one thing with Tom that I always think about, and that's 2018. I know we like cause I know with, I've said this before on this podcast numerous times. I know that in 2018 they had the Chiefs on the ropes and that it was a back and forth battle and that he was clutching overtime. I still say this, and I always will say this, that we should have looked back at that interview that he had with Tracy Wolfson after the Charger game. When Anthony Lynn decided, hey, I'm not going to make any adjustments. I'm going to let Tom Brady carve me up for 60 minutes. But we're going to play man coverage the entire time. He's going to cook us. And he looked at Tracy Wolfson and said, you know what? Everyone thinks we suck and we don't stand a chance. Going back to it, we should have all looked at that and said, oh, they're winning the Super Bowl. Like, it's not a matter of if. It's a matter of, yeah, they're going to do this. Like, the fact that he's creating doubt for himself.
Tom wants
like,
8 at this point. That's... He said he might be coming out of retirement. He wants 8.
Yeah. I take that interview with such a grain of salt. Because...
Get me Brady. Bring me Butler. Let's do this.
It's going to be a Maine football team that just – no more New England Patriots. It's just going to be like Maine has a new team. And it's going to be like McGarvin as head coach over there.
Oh, it's going to be great. And we're going to win all the games, man. Akeem Butler's going to go for 1,100. It's going to be awesome. Holy cow.
But so that's my list. But McGarvin, let's end on that note. How has the UFL been so far this year? Like for anyone out there not watching,
oh,
it,
man, like, you're missing some like pretty good football. It's interesting because it's pro football, right? Like it like looks like professional football. And so people will say things like, "Oh, I'd rather watch college," and I'm like, "It looks better. Like it looks like the quality of football is better than a lot of college teams." I think when we think about college, we think of like the 6 or 7 like big schools, but like a lot of times you're getting two matches between two teams who absolutely reek, you know, players who will absolutely never suit up again. You're like, oh, Riley, wow, this K-State Kansas game is really, you know, no one's ever looking at that like, yeah, this is great, unless you're a fan of the teams. Otherwise you're just like, all right. Whereas the UFL is like, all right, this is you know, professional quality football. It's obviously a step below the NFL, but you're looking at guys and you're like, I don't know. I kind of think that guy can play, or I think that guy, like, he'd probably be in camp this year. He might be able to do something. And this year, you know, my Stallions, my Birmingham Stallions are undefeated. You know, this is nothing new to us. It's what we do. My DC Defenders are 2-2. They have had a tough schedule. They lost to Birmingham this past weekend, 18-20. It's, you know, there are 4 good teams. So there are 8 teams in the league. I think 4 of them are like pretty good. San Antonio, head coached by Wade Phillips, he has them ready to play. They're playing good football. So I'm excited. You know, there's still 6 games to go heading in. So if you haven't tuned in, check it out. Saturday at like 1 o'clock, you're not doing anything anyway. Tune in.
And then in a month's time, you got my football coming back with the CFL, where I put my Salty Weller hat on to go cover the Toronto Argonauts. One thing I'm going to say before we wrap up to everyone, enjoy the draft. Don't be fickle about it. Just, you know what? Welcome the players with open arms. You have time to judge them. Wait till year 3. One last hot take I have before that happens is, and also not a hot take, one statement I'm going to make. So you know how you were saying earlier, Kyle Duggar, oh, Division II, no one knows, like, he's not going to be good. I remember seeing Sacramento State, LOL, next to Marte Mapu's name, and everyone right away, but then the real draft people were going, yeah, this guy could play.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
They know high expectations, but so much more to prove.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a tattooed across my forehead before the draft. Like, it's these guys that come and ball out at training camp because they want that spot on the team because, one, no one thinks they're going to get it, and two, in their mind, they have to ball out or they don't get it.
So when Pop Douglas has a 1,000-yard season, are you going to get that tattooed on your forehead?
No, I'm not making that promise.
He'll probably do it, too. That's the best part. He's, like, he's legitimately good. I know that when you have a bad team,
I'll do or something, but I ain't getting that test.
No, I want to keep it tame. I think he's gonna get it. I know when you have a bad team, a lot of times like people look and they're like, oh yeah, he had a lot of yards on a bad team, or he was really productive on a bad team. I think he would have been just as good or productive on a good team. So yeah. I can't wait to see him on a good team. Just get him a freaking quarterback. Like, give me a break with Bailey Zappi or Jacoby Brissett. And I love Jacoby Brissett, but he is not your 17-game starter. He's not taking you to the promised land. He'll win you, like, 6 good ones. And that all plays into why I think quarterback is just the position to take this year, because I think Jacoby can win you 6 games, and then you're out of range for a quarterback. So take the quarterback while you can. You don't know, and you're hoping that you won't. If things go according to plan, you will never be picking this high again. Take them while you can.
Yep, And also, too, unless the Patriots change divisions in the next 3 days and go to the AFC North, you know what? Take the quarterback. That's all I'm going to say there. Because, look, we know what Bailey Zappe does against that division. But besides that, you know what? He's not in that division. He's not in that division. So, you know what? Just let it be.
My hot take is give me two quarterbacks. Bring me two quarterbacks on one on Friday, one on Saturday. One on Thursday, one on Saturday. Give me a first and a fifth rounder. I'll be good. Reset that quarterback room. Give me a break with number four.
I want Joe Milton just because I know it'll make Alex Barr.
Holy shit. That is my guy. That is my guy. I know people are saying that he might switch positions because he's like, you know, not the best passer. Not
you need him to throw 5 yards, passer. He'll chuck at 80.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you never chuck him 80, you go chuck at 80. So yeah, bring me two quarterbacks. Let's do this the right way.
Sophie, anything to add?
Honestly, I'm just laughing. I'm laughing. Nope.
Guys,
I think I've said everything.
We're all going to be here for the draft. Sophie's going to be covering the draft from Gillette. You can find all of us on Twitter. All our handles are in the titles, and they'll all be in the bio below. Enjoy the NFL draft, guys, and remember, at the end of the day, don't be fickle.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.